My name is O'Nister, a poet of great fame. Whatever you're having, sure I'll have the same. And where I was born, I love the place still, about halfway between Quarter and Strawberry Hill. The neighbours all said he's a beautiful child, his face is like buttons or chilly or wild. And well I remember as a gossel of four, I was smoking and drinking and lots of things more. I had an old bike, it was a piercer stair. I could ride it both over and under the bear. I put on my good suit, going round with the ran, and the dog tore my breeches inside on the ground. Called the Quarter Port is that you see, when I was up in the Quarter Port, well, we live in Quarterly. We live in that village, you know where it is up there. And you see, I hurt me when I was bringing home turf, and the sand of turf fell off the top of the trailer. And when I was firing a few sands up. On the top of the trailer, we were near the field, and the other side happened to put me down, and just me looking up and hit me. And it was about 3 weeks after that, it was giving me, I could see five or six black spots in the leg. And because it was, so I went to the doctor then, but that's what I'm saying, but he took the Galway sent me, and when I went to Galway, the nurse said, you have to stay here, they're testing my eyes, and the doctor first, and then black doctors that came there in Galway Hospital, University Hospital, and so he said, he came along, and so the nurse came along and said, you have to sleep off and go to bed, you're kept here to see him, you have to go to an operation for that. Oh, but you're not staying, he said. So, you're not staying, she said, you have to stay. But he said, I'm leaving on my own downtown, he said, and I said, I have a dog at home, I said, won't the dog die? Down in the house at home, I said, who'll feed him? And she said, can you give the kids somebody? You want anyone in my house? I said. So we got the next thing. Go back there in the waiting room, she said. No, but the head doctor stuck his head in the door. Said, Mr. Lister, are you there? Oh, I got right, doctor, I said. Because he was a grand man, he was a fine man. And in the waiting room. No, he says, you have to go to Dublin this evening. Oh, God, I said. To Dublin. I thought, oh, God. Well, they said, I can't go to see him, doctor, anyway, they have no clothes on them. But you'll have to go, he said. Will you go on Monday? No, but I'll go on Sunday, he said, because my nephew's working there in the other care, he comes down, and I'll be up with him on Sunday, and I can stay with him, I said. And well, make sure you go now, he said, and so he wrote out a letter. And so I went to Dublin then, and I said, well, I'll be kept there, I'll be kept a few days now, he said. So that made matters worse altogether. But I went to Mass on Sunday, anyway, and I bought a negro to wish with me. I got to drunk and I know I was going to talk. And so I went up on Sunday, and Sunday evening, he didn't want to have anything going up either, because he had a girlfriend with him, but he didn't want to stand, and he didn't think it all himself. And so up in near, what do you call it, Kilbegan, I said, I have to go in here. I said, do you think, I have to go to the toilet. I said, so drink I want it. So what did I two pints and yes. He came after me and I went and so and I the two neg in the whiskey, I had a neg in his pocket. I bought a neg in there, I had a neg in with me from the morning. So when we landed in Dublin and went that night, he put me in this room where he was in a different room. It's not his own house now, there was a closed between the digs. And so my Jesus he came in and when he assessed my clothes, we had a battle. I said, you're not taking that which I want that one. But yes, I drank it during the night anyway. And I went, in the morning, he left me at, he missed a couple of hours work, he left me at Ayaneer Hospital. And when the doctor anyway, chased me, he said, he didn't come in dry today, he said. I said, I had a couple of few pints and killed Megan, he's coming up, I came up your sleeve. My God, he says, I've lived a long time. Yeah. He's working the guard, but the guard to see you, anyway. So he didn't say any more anyway. But he said, you have to stay. He said, they get you a bed down there. So I let Michael go work on it. So I knew I had to brave the storm, and instead of that, I was kept for a month. I had three operations, like, in the eye. And what I'm saying about how the, you know, I wrote the song, and about how I got the hairplane quarter port. My father called me in one day. He said, it's time you see through life. It's time you get your toenails clipped and get yourself a wife. Maybe, said he, you go to UCG and become an auctioneer. But I ignored his good advice and started on the beer. As time passed by, I got a sore eye. My local doctor made it quite clear. To me, he said, for you a bed up in Dublin Hospital, the Ioneer. Up there I went, 5 weeks I spent. I couldn't act the goat. So there gave me a million how they christened me the hairpine quarter port. This quarter farm is like Long Legged Italy. It starts at the new line there on the Tube Road, on the Milltown Road, we'd say, and it goes out to the Dublin Road. And you can see it right across there now, where that house is. That's the Dublin Road. And that's the Mairn Ditch Lake that comes up onto the Tube Road on the side of Lowe, where McQuarters lived, the owners of this farm, what was straight by the Land Commission. And during the famine years, there was 32 families here. I think they came from the north. So that's the story anyway. And there was all little houses up along there, and the marks are there yet. The big stones are up in our land there yet. We never touched them. And the father told the yarn that back when we lived, his father, like my grandfather, he had a load of turnips sowed. And when you get up in the morning, there wasn't much of them blood when the turnips left. They had them all gone. That's what kept them living. You know, it was the time of the famine. And he couldn't say what the was like, you know. So he picked them out, and they left a knife after them. And one of them met my father, my grandfather, at the fair in the moor afterwards, and he told him, he said, we're the men, he says, that took the turnips, he said. And it's a good job for you, he said, you didn't come out that night, he said, because you wouldn't go in lively. He said, that you kept 32 families living, he said. So that's the story that I had my father told me many times, like, whether that's true or not, now it must be. So, but the McQuarters, like, there was another fellow that owned this farm. He was Tully, and they had a big house down there, they had a race course down there as well. Just a load of more now, and Jimmy Kildare, like, he's the man who owns the farm now. But there was a lovely race course there, and the same as here, you could stand on top of a hill, that was a grandstand. And today, yeah, but when this man bought it, he wouldn't, you know, like, he stopped all the racing, and, like. And there was a story in the, I think it was, I know what paper it was now one time, by Sean Pinder, I think, or Pinder or something. And I read it myself, but I gave the paper away. That it was the longest race ever recorded. Like, it lasted about 3 hours and a half, this race. The horses just laid down for half an hour and get up again. and it was one horse anyway, she was down for half an hour, and that's the horse that won the race. It was an awful grueling test altogether. And it was down, that was in the paper now, that's about over 20 years ago, it was in the paper. I think it's Sean Pinder, but he's still writing some paper, I forget the name of the paper now. I gave it away to John Gallop and some kind of anyone didn't get it back. So that's enough for me. So no, he wouldn't give it away. So, but anyway, the McQuarters, Tully, he would have did it with the horses. He had a race horse too. And the name of the race horse was, he won the Galway Plate. And all that was on the horse was Tin Shin there and himself.
And the name of the horse was Ketchum. Ketchum was the name of the horse. And he was a stern looking horse. And the jockey was he was an army man. He was a man by the name of Freeman from Road and War. And he's dead now for a year, like. But he was the jockey and he trained the horse. And the horse now was stern looking. And nobody'd back the horse. And there was only Chin Bob in the horse, I was telling you. And when the horse was going, he was passing them all out. He was holding the jail in front of them. You know, they got on a plate. And the book was shouting. Chin Bob, bet your money on Ketchum, but you won't catch him now. Catch him if you can. You pay me. And he was shouting, that was the shouting. He was that, it was at the top of his way. He said, catch him if you can, but I'm afraid you won't. And, but anyway, the horse, the story is told anyway, that the horse, later, with, he was after they shot him, feed him well after that, when he won the gold medal plate, and they killed him with kindness, and you know, they gave him too much to eat. They overfed him. But like, he wasn't used to that. He was better off this time and left stabbed.
I went over to England in 1959, and myself and another mate of mine, Paraglain, he's dead since too up here in Ballymoney. He died since, but he was from Ballymoney up here, a neighbour of mine. We stole away, like, I had a care of the tribe as well. And it was awful bad weather, and I couldn't get work at all. And I know the sort of work I liked in. I knew how to do bits of plastering and all that, carry on. And I couldn't get any job at all, because all the public works were closed down with the frost. What a severe weather, it was so Christ, it was frost and snow, and I couldn't get nothing at all. I was walking around for a couple of days and I went. He got a job all right, he was driving machinery in a coal mine, like, when the coal mines there in Huddersfield. And the only job I could get was in the buses, like, they were looking bus conductors. My God. I went into the Long Ride Bridge in Huddersfield, that's the name of the place, and so I signed on for, like, you know, and so I spent 9 days training, like, and so my God, I passed the exams and all. Anyway, I was on the buses then, and I was 8 weeks, I think, on the buses. I liked the job, but I'd sort of be out in the open among the public, like, out, you know, out working, out in the building, or that kind of work. And I packed it up. But I wrote a song then about this Mary Glynn, like, the girl I was in love with. So I was homesick, like, and I wrote a song. I made that song now. When I was young and innocent, roaming I did go. I hid for Tube's Grand Station, Robin Redbreast's wife was low. So I took a chance for an advance, but one thing hurt me to the core. On board the ship, my heart did flip for Nurse Mary from Dunmore. As a bus conductor in Huddersfield, each day I hasted more. Up and down the stairs of my double-decker bus, the soles of my shoes were almost wore. One thing hurt me twice as much, oh, grammar a store, cause my mind was always wandering back to Nurse Mary from Dunmore. So I sought a new job and begun and begob. The next day I came to Crewe Station. There were black men and white men, Japs, Jews and Germans, and members of the Freemason. In a low tone of voice and in great frustration, I said the curse of trouble on all immigration. And in Birmingham, eating crusts of bread and jam, 'twas there I got Mogulure. In the midst of this crack, my mind wandered back to Nurse Mary from Dunmore. So late one night, on a bit of a skite, I hit back for Aaron's Green Shore. As I walked on Moore Square, just like a Lord Mayor, at the festival there were crowds galore. And between you and me, well, who did I see outside Frankly's lounge bar door? With her smiling face fair and her black curly hair, but my Nurse Mary Glynn from Dunmore. As her lips I kissed, it was then that I wished, as I did many times before, if I hadn't been born on April Fool's Day, I'd have a chance to make my way with Nurse Mary from Dunmore. Nurse Mary Glynn, oh, when will you give that final word? If you say no, then I must go to another lovely bird. I told this to my manager. To me, he politely said, go home to your quarter residence and into your quarter bed. The Guinness, I fear, from Barra and Clare, your brain with notions has fed. So the last that was wrote from the quarter port was from marriage right out of your head. The one I loved wouldn't marry me. And the one that it married me, I didn't love her. So nothing different was it. So then as time passed by, you know, like, the grey hair started to appear. So when my hair got, when I died in like, I'm a blondie now, you know. So I thought out of my head now. But you never know, after this great interview, they were nothing below anyway. Oh, love and greatness, like, one that wouldn't be blackguard, yeah? One that it, like myself, to be feel happy and not be worried about the whole world, worrying about things that wouldn't matter a damn, because... You know, like it all passes away in time, and so I can't understand why people make so much of life, and I mean make so much worry of life anyway. And worrying over things that matter to them is only just, I think it's only a waste of time. So, but I mean, I'd like to get one as well that would have a good bit of money. Do a bit of flirting here and there. I mean, the way it's gone now, I think the way the women are now, they expect the man to have the money, mostly. So I think, I stay as I am now. I think the point now is, this is the only hope I have before I reach the final journey.
Anyway, the McQuarters bought the farm up Tully. And they went to Westmeath first, and they only stayed there about 3 or 4 months, I think. And this farm was up for sale, I think, and they banked it up, like. And they bought the farm. And they built a house down there, then. There were 3 brothers. And there was a bit of land agitation, then the farmers wanted to get it. And across the road, you know, where that house is across the road there now, that was their field as well. And there's 5 acres in that thing, and the local farmers took it over, like, in spite. And one night, they rode, you know, the big crowd of them, they rode the ridges, and they didn't put any potatoes at all, like a prate, as we say, for them. So they sowed them, like, in order to claim the land. So, I mean, they didn't grow any spoon that way, you know, they didn't put any in it. But it still failed them, and... There was a fella, and he was shot down there, just right across there, walking the farm. He was shot from the top of the hill here somewhere. One of the McQuarters. And he was left there, like. And I won't mention the man that shot him, like, but he went to America. And he was home about 20 years ago. And he just came home to see the place. He lived across the road there, in a little house shed. But anyway... They found him. One of the brothers was out looking for him, like, he was long time gone, and he got him, and he wasn't dead. And they were down for the bishop, and down for the canon, who was here no more. And I won't mention his name anyway, so he wouldn't come up. In account of land agitation, he wouldn't come up to unite him. And he wouldn't come up, and after that, they turned them back to the church. You know, I don't really put that down, but they turned them back to the church, they never went to mass until they died. And except one of them. The fellow was injured, used to go to mess, all right. And they got a weak heart for these, and he wasn't able to go, they made them what they mean. But there was an old fellow who went said that they wouldn't go, but he says, the man that had the hearse down there, he's living, Jim McCormick, like, you know, the funeral undertaker. They said, he won't go to the church, but Jim McCormick will bring him in someday, and he won't. So, and he did, but he died soon as well. But anyway, over not going to church or anything, the National Day was dead, and he gave the whole place to the bishop in Tube. Bishop Goodon. There's a tomb now. I was a Bishop Welch. I don't know. I'm not so sure whether it was one of them anyway. And so they saw the land to the Land Commission. And that's what built the church and the war, most of it. That money. To see how it came to pass. So the land was striped in and we got this whole of the land. We lived back in Muller Mark, they call it. About a mile from here now, back to Milltown Road. So we're very happy here since. We have got, you know, a grand clean spot like, but it's in stormy weather, it's a bit wild, but it is a fine healthy place. It is. At the time we came over here, it was in 1968, the Land Commission striped it like, and we were 2 years waiting for, like, before the house was built here. And because that remove all that hill. This was a hill was as high as the rest of the, you know. So. And I remember the first Sunday that we got to move Friday like, and we got the word, and I was just standing on the hill myself to have a look to see, have a look at the ranch, and the next thing, somebody shouted into me, they wanted me like up the top of the hill there, and out, and they called me out on the road, and they said, your sister just after dropping dead, dying. And so that spoiled the parent for that time anyway, so. She was only 39 years too when she died. In our family, like there were 16 in the family, and six of them died. Like I remember two of them all right. One of them died at birth, and another called Paddy, and he died when he was about 5 years old. I think he'd be older than me now, like if he lived, like. And I remember him all right. I remember the women, but there was a terrible way, and oh, it was shocking, and but. Anyway, that was only like, a long time ago. But then, in my time, like we say, in later years, three of my sisters have died since. And their three husbands have died. And their four husbands have died. Bill's husband as well, the one I'm telling you about, her husband died as well. And three of my sisters died since. And the young lady I now tell you about died. And There are nine of them in now, not yet. There's one of them married and blowed them more there, in Sion Hill. Used to blow where I have the house there. And there's one of them up in Carrickeel. And there's one of them, Nellie's in Lomar, like, up in Lair Valley. And Josephine lived up in Carntandis. You know the guest house up there, that's where we just back that road. And she's dead too, like, her husband is dead too. I mean, I told you that, so. And there's two of them living. I don't say we're clip hanging. like, clipping off the clips of water and trying to get a grip. Suffer on. Or to survive and be happy on, I think, because it's great to be in good form again anyway, thank God.
Said the brother of the Pony and Catholic were changing out the turf and in the above the Hyanna, you know, the Hyanna we call it like. I used to call it the Grand Gallery. We had a Grand Gallery in the old church in the world, there was a high tut on. And on the way in, there was a kind of a jump on the way to the bog. And there was a television through there, you know. And, you know, an old television, like, you know what I mean? They weren't too long ago, but it must have been burned out or something. And so because I said to the brother, yes, I said, there's a television there. So I knew it was no use, like. And, so I said, my God, I said, I'll bring that television in tomorrow. And I brought a bushman saw with me, like, and I cut a pole, you know, where there's no tree growing the bog, fairly high one. And they stuck it down in the above the high anna. It was lovely hot weather. Or you could sit down anywhere part of the bog, like that's here now. And they put a bit of wire up the high pole on the television. And they had a transistor radio. And they put the transistor in the back, like, you know, and I took up the back and they put the transistor and switched it on. And there was a crowd, the crowd around cutting turf. And my God, I said to one fellow, I said, you ever see television in the bog? So, no, he said, I mean, yes, well, come up, I says, at 1 o'clock and I'll get the news for you. But I can't get the picture. But then I get the picture yet, I said, maybe. I'll get a different wire system or something. So I saw them coming anyway. Oh, yeah, about 10 as we came up, like, those. And there were Ronans and different people, like, that lived near us there, like, or maybe that were cutting turf near us. So I had the radio in the back and all, and I just switched on, like, and the news came out. Oh, Jesus. they went through the bog. They couldn't understand how I got the television going in the bog. They still don't know either. I just didn't want to deal with me, and so, that's the way we had to have the crack that time, like. I mean, we used to have the crack anyway. It was the best of time as well. Now it's better than worrying about the turf. We got the turf after. I remember one time the caring for players came around here putting on plays up here in the town hall, to Moore. And we met some of them down in Glynn's public house. And there was a fellow with me called Johnny Hughes, a neighbour of mine. And so he asked me, could I any good characters around Stanmore? So I said, well, there's one with me now, I said. Right here, I said, Johnny Hughes. I said, what kind of a fellow is he? Well, I said, he's a man that'll sleep all day, I said. And I said, that's the least of his worry, I says. And he comes to town, I says, and he's very fond of booze as well, I says. And I said, he buys a loaf and he wears a big black top coat. And under his arm, he puts the loaf. He walks to town, I says. And so that night, we went to play, and my God, the first thing we heard was in Minnie and the Ravens. And Dalton, Ann Dalton was her name at the time. And so she started off to play. There's a man outside the town. He's very fond of booze. You'll see him down the town at night, and his name is Johnny Hughes. In daytime, you'll seldom see him at all. You'll swear the man is dead. But you'll see him down the town at night under his oxen and loaf of bread. Glory, glory, hallelujah. And time goes marching on.
I went to school now, and I never forget it.
When you approached the morning walk, right, and then you might get a few, 5 or 6 steps, maybe some more, you know, for all kinds of everything, maybe smoking cigarettes or something. And, but anyway, one day the teacher, Jim O'Grady, he asked a question, of, and I think we're in the 6th class, we're on the 6th class, about 8 of us, I think, and he asked me to go out his and cut a stick out at the back of the... Yeah, the back of the hill now. They haven't done anything, but so all gone. And he says, "Hey, just sticks grow down along there." And he gave me a penknife, and I went out. And I thought, we all put up our hands, you know, like, and though we knew the answer, but I shook me own, nearly shook it off myself. So beat them all as though I thought, and I thought I'd won, answered the question right. So he sent me out, and I cut a nice one anyway. Said I'll get me own back in some of those, and I'll kick out wood. And when I came in anyway, he says, "You get the nice one, I did." I said, "I got one with, there was nothing in it." I said, "This is my own mind." So, "Hold out your hand," he said, and he said, "You give me 4 slaps." And I said, "In my own mind," I didn't say to him, of course. And that's the last time I'll ever put a bully stick to bait myself. So, anyway, I made a song about that place, about that school. About the school and about the about Jim O'Grady, was in it too, I think, the teacher. So I'll say it for you, like. And the name of the song, the title of the song is "The Tough Men from Dunmore." I was born on April Fool's Day, an awful day to be born, like. And of course, the count of the day, April Fool's Day, they all clashed me as a fool. So I wrote the song anyway, and I'll say it for you now. So. I was born and reared in Mullagh Mark, a place I'll never regret. And on April Fool's Day, I heard people say, "His image we'll never forget." A slap from my mother's hand kept me well in command. My father said, "Send him to Strawberry Hill School." And on account of the morn when I was born, all pupils classed me as a fool. The road to school for this April Fool was paved with broken stones. We wore no shoes and got many a bruise and plenty of aches in the bones. When I came home from school, it was the golden rule to give a helping hand to a neighbour. And from Mr. Grady, the teacher, I learned for the future that I was in for hard labour. He said, "Don't go crazy, the job will be nice and easy, such as pitching slits and picking stones." I knew in my heart and soul, as time took its toll, that I would suffer from aching bones. Then he brought me out to Clonoch Bog, spreading turf with a makeshift barrow. The following day I was sore nose with a horse that failed to pull the harrow. There's nothing whatever the matter with me. I'm just as healthy as I can be. I have arthritis in both knees, and when I talk with a wheeze. My pulse is weak and my blood is thin, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. I think my liver is out of whack, and a terrible pain is in my back. My hearing is poor and my sight is dim, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. I have earth support for both my knees, so I'm able to walk near the street in the breeze. Sleeplessness I have night after night, and in the morning I'm just a sight. My memory is failing, my head's in a spin, I'm peacefully living in an aspirin, but I'm awfully well for the shape I'm in. The model is, as this tale I unfold, that for you and me who are growing old, it's better to say I'm fine with a grin than to let you know the shape I'm in. I stopped writing it, I suppose I'd be about over 40 anyway, but... I used to write at home, like, in the night time. I was doing odd jobs around Dunmore, you know what I mean, like, and I was contracting here and there. And I used to have a few men working with me too. The few years I'm working with me, like, I wouldn't have any men for work at all, you know. I wanted somebody that wouldn't start too early, anyway. And I used to start at about 11 o'clock, you know, but anyway, when I go home in the night evening, you know, I'd have a few pints and
in bed then I put turned on the light, I'd ruined my own room and I'd just write the poems and I'd lots of written like with pencil that time mostly I had, you know. And my dear, I had the book again, I couldn't make it out. Nobody could because it was all, you know, it decayed, like decayed away, you know, and I had a play written too. I had a play about a farmer, like, like one verse play I'd written, but and about characters I knew, like, that, in that farm and the people of that farm and in Stabbery Hill, but where I went to school as well. It was just the back of the school, but I forgot it all again, like. But if I happened to have a buyer up in that time, I'd run just to a development. And I got up around 8:45 and then you know, I get ready and come to town because I'm not able to work, you see. And one side it was all nearly broken up, so that hand, I broke the hand twice, you know. And so I come to town then down Sunburns and to meet the people here. And I like that, like. I'm here the whole time, so they all know me here now. And I can meet there's Tom Burns, as long as Tom don't mind. And even when I was sick, Tom used to take me home in the car every evening. And he does yet too, like, by a few pints. And I think if I stayed home, like, I'd have died with worry as well. I'd have, looking out the window, especially with the last few years now, it has rained the whole time, you couldn't do anything. I used to worry a bit now and again, but, you know, in the night time, like, I was running around with chest a while, like, as well. I mean, bronchitis, I'm taking tablets the whole time, too. And, but I asked the doctor, when he would give me the tablets, my blood pressure was a bit high there a while, too, and as well. And so I said, will they interfere with my drink? Because I said, that's the only enjoyment I have, I said, a few places and to meet the people. I said, and I said, I cannot work, I said, and as you know, and I said, if you could be off the beer, I said, I mean, yes, I won't live a month. I said, I'm not saying that your tablets won't do me good, but, well, you can take a few points, he said, but don't go too heavy, he said. So I take a few points every day. I have to pray soon, and, well, pray soon, no praise anyway. And you buy me 2 pints this morning. Seamus. it keeps the man's spirits up anyway. So I think it's not a way to live too. A lot of people I mean, around our place now, I think I saw a lot of young people. Not right for me to say it, but a lot of them died like a horse with their shoes out in the field, working on their table to work. And then plenty of money, greed. if they had plenty, with that plenty of money, why didn't they take it easy? And they left it all behind them. So I think when you go there, I mean, I saw this nippy of mine now, I was thinking when it, the song said there, I think this Catty Duckin wrote it there. And she says, about the miner, he never sees the sun. Well, they think when we go underground, you never see the sun. didn't that we get much of it now, which I mean, the point is, well, anything we get in it, but to try and get it here than underground. So I make the best of life. That's my attitude in life, anyway.
In slumber deep, I fell asleep and dreamt that I was dead. The neighbours all, both big and small, were gathered round my bed. They said it's many a rhyme he's written, and many a song he wrote. But there's nothing half so sad, said they, as the death of a great poet. A stranger walked up to my bed, he said, now come along, to appear before St. Peter, but he doesn't like verse or song. And as I floated upwards and reached the golden gate, St. Peter stood before me. He said, young man, you're late. We take here all sorts with spiles and warts. Me no gamble on the tote. We have builders here from Camden here, but we never take a pause. I know it's many a rhyme you have written and many a song you wrote, but because you come from quarter, you're only a quarter post. In deep dismay I turned away, my mind and spirits fell. The other signpost on the road was pointing down to hell. St. Peter stood before me, and he opened wide the door. We've just received a telegram from a TD in Dunmore. Now I'm satisfied, I haven't died, I'm not quarter pot nor full. But early or late at Heaven's Gate, you cannot beat the pull.
God to God, we be, the verse said, I think Big Crosby is the singer with it, and underwrote it. If there's going to be a life hereafter, and so more I think there's going to be, there must be, because, I mean, how does it all come from? How do they come from? How, the way they're looking like, how they take the flowers and everything, and take them with the time, nothing will grow. But on manure, like I say, the people and everything, and nothing is grown with the time. And the wildflowers are out there, and this year in particular, up to, along the road there now from here to the graveyard, oh, there's all kinds of flowers and everything. Most beautiful flowers, and look at the trees and everything, how they're blooming again. And in winter time, then you see how they all go again. It's like the people dies too, the same way. But people can't see that's all. I think there are a lot of people that don't think that, they think they never die. You wouldn't know what? I can't understand. It's all greed. So, I think we'll live hereafter.